Hello, I Should Be Writing listeners. This is Mer Lafferty, and I'm opening this up with a little bit of information, with a little bit of news. Because of burnout and because of finishing my latest book, I've decided to take June off of most things, including recording and podcasting. You'll be getting this in June 2022 because I recorded it in May and didn't get it up. This kind of thing led to the burnout. But haven't had a chance to talk about the fact that I will be interviewing John Scalzi about his latest book, The Kaiju Preservation Society, for our latest Spoilers Club interview, June 25th, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. If you need to be reminded what the Spoilers Club is, we read the book ahead of time and then talk to the author about why they made decisions. Any topic is up for grabs. We're going to be doing it live and then placing it in the feed later. If you want to watch live and join us, that would be twitch.tv/mightymer. And again, that's June 25th, 2022, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Now let's get to our show. So we are welcoming in Gwen Garfinkel and Ghosts on I Should Be Writing Season 18, Number 40. Wow, number 40. Hi there, everyone. Welcome to I Should Be Writing. This is a podcast for wannabe fiction writers. I'm your host, Mer Lafferty. I stream this show live twice a week, Tuesday, Thursday, on twitch.tv/mightymer, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, and then it goes into the podcast feed, where you can subscribe, or I guess the word is now follow, because subscribe implies money, I think. You can now follow from any podcatcher that you have. I've been doing this show a long time, since before I've published anything, and now I've published more things, so the show kind of chronicles my path. But I am glad to have welcome a guest this time. I don't have a lot of guests on. You'd think that the some of the publicists who contact me would realize that, but they also don't know that I usually like to talk to science fiction, fantasy, and horror writers too. But anyway, I am very glad to welcome Gwen Garfinkel to the show. How are you, Gwen?
I'm good, thanks.
Good. I'm excited to talk about your book that came out in January, Can't Find My Way Home, but we will do our usual stuff for the show, which involves what I've been up to, and I'm laughing because I'm just kind of all over the place this week. This morning was sitting down and wrestling my outline into submission so that writing will go well next week. I feel like I'm on like the last 25%, but I have more words to write than that. But my confidence with the novel, it feels like I've written 75%. So I really hope that I'm not like completely shocking myself next week when I realize that it's going to be harder than I think it is. Outlining is hard and I hate it. So I can't even tell you where my word count is now. I think it's at officially 53,000, but there's a lot more planned and there's a lot more little scraps here and there. So I don't know if I can give a solid word count report between now and June, but I'll try. But yeah, I'm looking forward to going on my writing retreat next week to try to hammer out the rest of this. Gwen, do you have anything you'd like to share that you're working on? You don't have to, but...
Just started revising a new novel, which is like over 150,000 words, which I have no idea how that happened. I'm hoping it will wind up being slightly less massive, but who knows? But I'm having a lot of fun with it, so that's good.
It was really funny when we were chatting before the stream. The things you were saying was like you were narrating my writing life, because it's hard to find a lot of writers who write short. You know, writers usually just get every single word in their head on the page and don't understand why the publisher doesn't want a 250,000 word novel from a beginner. And, you know, you have to encourage people to learn how to cut And for me, it's like, all of my people are in a white room, and we don't know what any of them look like, and there's kind of a battle, but not really, so I kind of need to add about 20,000 new words to get some description in there. But the problem you mentioned actually is the problem I had on my upcoming book, which is I couldn't believe how many words that I had. But luckily, my editor said that it didn't read. What's the word she used? Padded, maybe? I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so at least I had that. But this is my very chatty way to say that I feel your pain. Do you think you'll be cutting words, or do you think that with your lack of description like I have, do you think you're going to have to do some adding as well as subtracting in edits?
Well, I'm definitely going to have to do some adding of, like, the white room problem you described. Mm-hmm. That's always me. I've got to, like decorate the house where the characters live. I've been doing a little cutting as I've just been looking at it before I really dive into heavy revisions. And, you know, I've already cut a few thousand words just of, like, extraneous, you know, reallys and justs and saying the same stuff over and over again. So I'm always happy to find bits of that I can cut on the way. But yeah, I'm not sure how much shorter it's actually going to be.
Yeah,
because of the stuff I know I'm going to have to add. And so far, plot wise, it doesn't seem like anything is super wrong. Like that, I can cut like a whole, you know, area in that way.
Yeah,
but we'll see.
Or even like remove an entire character. Man, that's a scary ask. But yeah, so I'm basically just getting ready for my trip and I want to sit down and feel confident that everything's in the right place. And it's not quite there yet, but I think I'm just going to have to keep adding pieces and hoping I'm going to put it in the right place. But let's get on to good news. I don't think I have any. Not anything new. The dog that has not had the toe problem has decided to act a little sick today, which of course, you know, he's just trying to mess with me, I'm pretty sure. That's not good news, but yeah, I think things are pretty much just on the same even keel. Gwen, do you have any good news you'd like to share? And you in chat, if you have any good news, please let us know.
Well, I have good news, which is to say I got a rejection today.
Oh, wow! Rejections! Rejection numbers go up. Congratulations, Gwen. I'm so sorry, but congratulations for continuing to do the damn work.
Well, it's one I've been kind of... I knew it was probably coming. I mean, it would have been nice if it hadn't, but I've been kind of waiting around for it, so it's good that it finally showed up.
Now you can move on.
And send the thing somewhere else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we got one rejection from Underpope. Congratulations, Underpope. Thank you for adding. I didn't do the yay button for Gwen. I will do the yay button for Gwen. Fine, I'll do it anyway. I'm not afraid. Anyway. And Kay Kimmy has been doing adulting. That is fun. You know, I realized yesterday we have a compost service. So we just put our compost in a big bin and someone takes it away. And then later on, you know, in the spring, we can get compost to put in our gardens. And I keep getting mail from them telling me I'm doing it wrong. Like, I put a box out there that wasn't a pizza box, and they will take pizza boxes, but they won't take anything else. And then I get the thing about there was something in the pizza box, and that wasn't good. And a friend of mine said that being scolded for your garbage is peak 2022, which I agree. And then yesterday I did it just fine, and I didn't get any nasty grams. But I realized that adulting means you still get yelled at when you do something wrong, but when you do something right, that's what's expected, so nobody gives you a gold star. I did complain to my friend about this, and she sent me a composting gold star, so I did appreciate that. But so that's why it's awesome just to cheer for adulting, because nobody else does. Yes, Number Ninja got accepted for a job. Congratulations, Number Ninja. Very happy for you. Congratulations. And it looks like I have hit all of the good news. If you are listening to this later and you have good news for me, then please email me and put good news in the subject line and I'll read it on the next stream. But enough about me. Let's talk about you, Gwen. You get to be the first person I'm actually trying out a slightly new format on, which is, you know, talk about something on my Tuesday stream and bring it up with my guest if they're on the Thursday stream. So, unfortunately for you, on Tuesday, I was basically talking about missed opportunities that were missed because of decisions that I made, not, you know, which is why rejections are so awesome, because you do try, but it's the stuff that you don't think. You think, I'm not going to do that. That'll probably be crappy. Or what, the project you don't even start. And I was feeling kind of morose about stuff like that. So do want to talk about your new book, or your 5-month-old book. But would also like to talk to you about that kind of thinking, if that's okay with you. So let's start with Can't Find My Way Home. You want to tell us the plot line?
Yeah. Well, it's set in the mid-1970s in New York. Joanna is a young actress on a soap opera. And she's being haunted by the ghost of her best friend, who got killed protesting the Vietnam War. She was supposed to be there with Sin when this happened, and she backed out at the last second, so she's been really guilt-stricken about it for a long time. Then Sin shows up, and she's not happy about it either, to put it mildly. Jo has to figure out what's going on, and she keeps getting sent back to the night that Sin died, and relives her life in different ways according to what happens at that moment.
Wow, that's awesome. Like the whole Groundhog Day slash almost saying it's like a computer game feels like it lessens it, but it's that going back to one area and then starting over again to see if you can do something different mentality that I love in storytelling. Your voice is really nice. It's really ground you in the 70s quickly. And I don't even know how to say how you did that, but I really enjoyed that part of it. How much of your own experience did you bring to this, if I may ask?
Well, I mean, I was like, at the time period of the book, I was like 10 years old. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I was around, but I was a kid. And I mean, some of the political things that happened that are mentioned in the book, like the SLA, the Patty Hearst and the SLA. Mm-hmm. It's like, I remember that, but I didn't have a clue what it was. Yeah. It was just sort of in the background and kind of interesting. So it was something that later on I wanted to know about. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I was in New York for a little while in around that time. But yeah, so I mean, I was there, but I did a lot of research because it was, you know, my perspective, as who I was at the time is vastly different from the characters who were grown-ups.
Mm-hmm. You write a variety of stuff. We ran some of your stuff on Escape Pod a while back, which was just awesome. I really enjoyed that. And of course, I can't remember the name of it. This is my bane.
A Wild Patience.
Thank you, A Wild Patience. I went back and reread it and was reminded how great it was. But, you know, that was kind of a Android Stepford kind of story. And now we have, like, a ghost story and you write poetry. So how far does your genre stretch?
Pretty far. I mean, yeah, I started out writing novels when I was very young. And actually when I was a kid, I wrote stuff with a ghost in it. And I also wrote some stuff that was, you know, no fantasy element at all. And then I wrote a lot of poetry, and then I sort of found my way back to writing stuff with a speculative element. And then I discovered that there were poets who were writing with a speculative element. So then I got into that too.
Yes, there are.
Yeah, I always had that stuff, you know, I was always interested in that, but I did get an MFA, you know, I got an MFA in poetry and fiction, and I was writing a vampire novel in my MFA program, but that was kind of before people, it was like very few of the MFA programs were interested in that kind of stuff at the time. I got in because I was writing, literary poetry.
Right.
And I was like, oh, but I want to write this vampire novel about a vampire poet. which is what I did. So yeah, now I'm sort of grounded in the literary thing, but pretty much everything I do has some kind of speculative element.
Right. Yeah, and your stuff's been published in Uncanny and where else? What does publish the speculative poetry these days? Who else is doing that?
Strange Horizons.
Strange Horizons, that was it. Thank you.
Yeah, but yeah, I've had several things with them. Fireside, you know, they're mm-hmm. going away soon. I mean, I haven't been published with them, but they publish a lot of speculative poetry.
That's right. That's a shame. Fireside is going away.
Yeah. Other ones, smaller zines, Not One of Us and Dreams and Nightmares. They mm-hmm. both do poetry.
So what kind of stories do you like to tell?
Well, I mean, one thing similar with this, with the novel and A Wild Patience, I mean, they both have kind of I almost hate to call it historical because mm-hmm. it's so recent.
Yeah,
I mean, for me, it feels recent, but yeah, I mean, a lot of the stuff I like to tell has some kind of a, like, recent historical, political kind of element. Yeah, with A Wild Patience, it was set in the 80s.
Yeah.
The one I'm writing now, though, is set actually in the mid-aughts, which has kind of been a challenge to remember what the heck was happening then and how people dressed then.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's like there are kind of political reasons why I set it then, because when the book begins, there's a woman who is really annoyed because her husband likes to watch right-wing TV, like Rush Limbaugh type stuff.
Right.
Anyway, yeah, that always seems to creep in, some kind of political element. But then I always like to have, well, I mean, there's the ghost and the alternate realities of the protagonist's life in the novel, and the robots in A Wild Patience.
Mm-hmm.
And the one I'm writing now, there's a supernatural pregnancy.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's always terrifying. Something
it's kind of, yeah, the supernatural pregnancy and like a sort of guardian angel. It's, I mean, there's these various tropes I always wanted to write about, and I finally figured out how to make a story of them.
So, well, wait, what do you mean by that? Are they tropes that you worried were fully tread and you going there would be tired?
No, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie, The Bishop's Wife. It's a movie from the 40s. Cary Grant plays this guardian angel. He gets summoned to by this bishop whose marriage is on the rocks, and of course Cary Grant immediately like falls for the bishop's wife, and you know,
Cary Grant.
But it's a movie from the 40s, so it's not going to go anywhere too terribly risque. And I just thought, well, but what if it did?
Yeah.
So that was kind of one of my ideas, and then I kind of had this other idea of like the supernatural pregnancy, like thinking about like abortion rights. What if you had like a supernatural pregnancy and it had this angle about abortion, mm-hmm. abortion rights? And then I'd always wanted to write both of those things, and then I kind of stuck them together.
Right.
It wasn't that I thought they were, I mean, they are very well tread, but I also thought they were fun. They were, you know, they were just things I would enjoy working on if mm-hmm. I could figure out how to do it in a new kind of way. It took me a long time, though. What I'm writing now, I wrote like the first chapter and then hit a wall.
Oh, wow.
And because I had a really torturous writing process with Can't Find My Way Home, I was like, I'm not doing that again. It's like, it turned out well, but I was like, gosh, I don't want to waste the amount of time I wasted figuring out what I was doing with this, not with this novel. I was like, I'm not going to keep writing until I figure out what's wrong and why I keep, you know, just slamming into a wall. So I did wait. And then all of a sudden, you know, I picked it up again and started writing. I was like, oh, that character, my conception of this character was completely wrong. And that's why there's all these plot holes over here. And as soon as I knew the character, then the plot holes vanished and I was able to suddenly write 150,000 words.
So I know this sounds like the when I answer these questions, it's quite vague, but I'm always hoping somebody else has more information. So you said you discovered it's the it was the character and you fixed the character, which fixed the plot holes. How did you identify it was the character and how did you fix it? Because broken characters seems to be a bane of my existence. Because I know, yeah, it's like when description's weak, I know description's weak, and I know I can go back in there, and it's like, all right, if I just sit here and don't worry about the story, I just focus on the room, I can describe an okay room. I can describe her clothes. But it's like, if I can't grasp the character, I'm like, I don't know what to do.
I couldn't, I can only do it by writing it, mm-hmm. which is kind of a paradox because I, you know, I kept not writing.
Yeah.
I don't know if I had, if I, you know, maybe if I had pushed it earlier, I could have gotten there. I'm not sure. But yeah, I was writing and suddenly the character said something that just kind of totally illuminated who this person was, mm-hmm. which was completely different than I thought. Like his motivations were very different than I had thought. And he just said, it's like just one sentence. I was like, oh, it's like, okay, now I get him and I get why these things are happening. And it's, you know, and again, it suddenly the plot holes were gone because I was like, well, that doesn't make any sense. You know, he's doing this, but he doesn't even have to do this because he doesn't even need to do this in order to get what he wants. I was like, oh, but that's not actually what he wanted. And then it made sense.
Right.
But yeah, I don't think I could have done it just by sort of thinking about it. I just had to kind of stumble into it.
Okay. Yeah, that's kind of how I fix things. Usually writing stuff.
I wish that wasn't the case.
I know. It's so time consuming, isn't it? So to my issues with thinking about projects that I haven't done and for no other reason than my own fear, or yeah, it's usually fear of failure, fear of putting too much work into something that will just flop, which I guess is failure, but it's that one almost hurts worse because that's one of those things where, I mean, you know, sometimes when you write a story, you're just like, okay, well, I got that out of my system and it sucks and I'll move on. But sometimes you do something and you think it's great. You think this is really gonna be great. And it's not. It's not even that people didn't like it. It's like they don't pay any attention. And so I've had that happen a couple of times and I thought, well, what if that happens again? And so I was feeling morose because I wish that I was not affected by stuff like that. And I was, you know, thinking about Jim Henson and how many failures he had before his wild successes. And do you ever deal with this kind of regret? And if so, how do you deal with it?
Well, actually, I was thinking about the effect that finally selling a novel had on my writing,
because
mm-hmm. It was a very long process. I had another novel that I think is a good novel, and I had an agent with that, and it didn't sell. And then I wrote Can't Find My Way Home, and then I, in the midst of that, I had to part ways with the agent, and so it became harder to sell the book. And then I did sell it, and when I did sell it, it's like in between, I worked on another novel that, you know, again, kind of didn't go anywhere publishing wise. So I started writing a lot of short things because I was like, you know, why am I writing novels if I'm not if I'm not ever going to sell one? I'll write short things. It won't mm-hmm. take as long. I'll, you know, be able to get them published, hopefully. And I did a lot of that. And then when I actually sold a novel, I was like, that's when I was motivated to get back to this project that I'm working on. Because
mm-hmm.
it is that kind of a thing. It's like, why, you know, why even bother, you know? And yeah. Then that gave me, when I sold, finally sold a novel, I was like, oh, now I have the impetus to write another novel. And, you know, I'm so glad that I finally did because I've been having a really good time writing it. And I mean, regardless of what happens with it, I've had such a really fun time working on it that I would hate to have deprived myself of that experience. So I guess that's kind of, I mean, you know, if when you're a professional writer who that's your living, it's, you know, there's a lot of other stuff that has to go into decision making than I have mm-hmm. right now. So yeah, I mean, there's that whole bunch of things. It can't always be about the fun or the challenge, yeah. You know, when you're thinking about your career and money kinds of things. So that's the other side of it, of course. But yeah, that was a factor for me. I kind of didn't realize at the time that I was like, you know, why am I going to spend all this time writing another novel?
Yeah. Yeah, it's rough. It really is. Yeah, that's the slog just is the hardest part. And
but the fun, but when it's fun, you know, and I had so much fun too, right? I mean, even though it took me a long time to get to the fun part of writing Can't Find My Way Home, mm-hmm. once I hit that part, then it was one of the most fun times I've ever had. And same with the one I'm working on now. So, I mean, that's the other side. I mean, yeah, there's definitely the slog, but there's also, for me, when it's going well with writing a novel, there's kind of nothing like it. There's no other experience like it.
Yeah, that's true. I usually describe it like trying to run down a hill and not fall down. Like the not too steep, but the gravity's just taking you and you're just trying to keep up instead of not going up the hill. It's not tiring. You just try not to fall. So that's my metaphor. Yeah, so we are getting close to the end of my questions. Now, what is your writing process? You mentioned that it was not your full-time job. How do you fit it in?
Well, I have time. I don't have another job right now, so I've got the time to do mm-hmm. it. But I have like for the past 4 years I have chronic vertigo, so that sometimes causes me some problems.
Yeah.
Right now it's been okay, but yeah, I mean there have been times when I could like barely, you know, or couldn't sit at my desk, had to like work out other ways to even, you know, work at all, mm-hmm. which was rough, but fortunately that has not been the case for a while. So yeah, that's been more of what has gotten in my way in, you know, recent times. When I had a full-time day job, which I did for many years, I wrote Can't Find My Way Home at lunch and at night. And yeah, it took forever. it took a long time. And I'm not particularly a fast writer, even when I have the time. Mm-hmm. So in that regard, I guess it wasn't horrible because it wasn't like I would have been done doing vastly more. I wouldn't have been vastly more productive, but I would have been more productive.
Yeah.
But just, you know, it took a long time, and it also took a long time because, as I alluded to before, it took me a long time to figure out what I was doing with that book. Mm-hmm. It started out in the third person. It's in the first person now.
Yeah. Recently, we talked to Lily Lanoff, author of One for All, who wrote, she has POTS, which stands for something I don't understand, like really long words, but it is a blood pressure chronic illness that also has dizziness and weakness mm-hmm. things. And so we got on the topic of writing with chronic disability or chronic issues that keep you from writing. Do you have any advice or even just tell us how you handled it on those days? And if you didn't, that's an answer too that we respect around here.
Well, when it first started, it was very debilitating, and I a lot of time just trying to figure out what was going on and how to handle it. And I didn't want to feel like I wasn't doing any writing at all, because that was just even more depressing. So, but when it's very debilitating, it's hard to focus. It's hard to do any of that. But I would try, you know, first I would try to find a comfortable position. And again, it was like, but I have my desk. I have the whole setup, you know, my ergonomically sound way of doing things. I'm like, yeah, but you can't sit there right now. So it's like, okay, how can I, you know, what position can I be in that I can actually function for a little while? And, Or I would just like write longhand. It's like whatever I found I could do, I would do for a little while. Mm-hmm. And I wrote a thing or two. I wrote a poem about disability that wound up being published in an anthology of work inspired by Ursula K. Le Guin. Mm. Ended up coming out earlier this year, late last year, earlier this year. Anyway. So yeah, and I wrote poetry actually. I think mostly I wrote poetry when things were really bad because it was small and I could focus.
Right.
Yeah, but ordinarily now I can pretty much function. But yeah, if things, you know, if I find I'm uncomfortable, I'll just, you know, get up, do something else, and try again later. It's mm-hmm. just, you have to be kind of flexible.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also the other thing that got in my way a lot is a lot of trying to treat the thing. And there were, you know, there were times when I was, you know, going to a doctor several times a week trying to, you know, figure out things. And so I had to also be flexible with my writing schedule and be like, okay, you couldn't write today. How about after dinner? It just, you know, things like that, you know.
And also, I mean, besides your schedule, that also messes with your mental health and ability to focus. I mean, sometimes when I have one appointment in a week, that day I'm pretty much not good afterwards. It doesn't even matter what the appointment is. It's just like that mental break and the physical break of everything I was doing before, I just can't find it again. And just, so the handling that was a big deal as well for you, it seems. I would guess.
Yes. Actually, because for a long time, you know, I was like, I had a schedule before I got the vertigo. I had like my daytime writing schedule, and I didn't, pretty much it was like Monday through Friday. In the evenings, I was done. And I had to sort of get it through my head, you know, more recently. Yeah, but you don't, you know, on those days when you have, or those weeks when you have a couple of doctor's appointments, wouldn't you rather get some writing done too, if you can? I was like, well, how about after dinner? It just, you know, it was like a mental block. It's like, but that isn't my schedule. It's like, well, maybe it is now. And mm-hmm. and now I actually, for the most part, I do some work after dinner, and it's been a way for me to be more productive because I'm not a fast writer. So yeah, I think kind of being willing to reevaluate your work schedule for me has been super helpful.
That's great. Awesome.
And it helps me with mental health wise. It helps a lot to feel less helpless about the situation.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I've got to do this other stuff and it's messing with my schedule, but there are these other hours that I can try to make use of.
Yeah. Yeah. We around here, we don't really hold on to the whole you must do a routine in order to become a pro writer, because it's just, it's not possible for a lot of people. And so, but talking about how you can handle getting writing done when you have these other, either disability or, you know, a lot of people are caregivers to the very young or the very old, or it's just that whole write 1,000 words a day thing is not for everybody, unfortunately.
Well, yeah. I mean, I had to go through that, you know, fairly recently when my mother was in the hospital. And yeah, there were weeks in there it was like, I'm not working. Yeah. You know, there were times it's like, no, I just can't. There are times when you just can't.
Yeah. Under Pope wants to know, how can one become a faster writer? I'd love to know. I don't know if that's rhetorical or not, Under Pope. Do you have any answers, Gwen?
Well, I mean, for me, it's helped just being flexible about when I can work. And, you know, I mean, I think there were times when I just thought, oh, but I'm just, you know, I'm too tired at the end of the day, especially when I worked my full-time day job. Like, I'm too tired. But then I found that I could kind of put on some music I liked, you know, maybe have a glass of wine and just kind of, you know, and manage to kind of get a second wind, mm-hmm. and to kind of enjoy, kind of make it an enjoyable way to spend the evening. When I was revising Can't Find My Way Home, I definitely did that. And it became something I actually looked forward to at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. You know, I kind of don't know how, because I know how tired I was at the time.
Yeah, I bet.
But I remember doing it, and that it was kind of a fun. I mean, it was revisions, so I think it was easier than it would have been to write a first draft mm-hmm. at the end of the day. It didn't, you know, didn't require the same kind of brain, you know. Anyway, but yeah, I think just, or even, you know, just. I mean, like I said, I wrote a lot of stuff just during a half hour lunch break when I had a day job. I think trying to make it like something you look forward to, as opposed to, oh God, this other thing that I have to do and squeeze in. I think that helped me. I would like go and get my lunch and then tweet what I was having for lunch. And then I would write through my lunch.
Right.
Just became like a nice kind of ritual.
And what I'm discovering under Pope is stopping to reevaluate my outline. I'm completely a pantser, but I've realized that figuring out a timeline is my best way to figure out an outline, because it helps me not have one POV reacting to something that has not happened in the other POV because I didn't line everything up correctly. And in being able to lay out the timeline and figure out what's happening when, I'm finding the scenes themselves easier to write. So I may not write every single day, but when I do write, I'm doing 2,000 and 3,000 words at a time because I feel more confident with what I'm putting down. Also, if you're writing a murder mystery, when you know who did it, it's a lot faster. Yeah, I did not know who did it, and then I thought I knew who did it, and then I changed my mind, and then once I figured it out, it all clicked into place. So I think what I'm really trying to say is adapting your book as you write it, like being able to stop and do an outline or a timeline, or step back from it and look at the thing as a whole and see if there's anything that needs to be changed or tweaked. And I know that this sounds like you're writing on the edge of the knife, the knife edge of going back to edit chapter one over and over and over again. But for me, it's just, I know I'm going to finish it, but sometimes I need to step back and see, may not be writing, may not be writing linearly. I think allowing myself to not write linearly, is that a word? Yeah. In a linear fashion, how's that? Has allowed me to be faster, because if I don't know what comes exactly next, but I know, you know, this fight that's going to happen, then I can write the fight. So, and if the connective tissue doesn't quite connect, I'll edit it. So,
yeah, a little planning is helpful, even though, yeah, I'm pretty much a pantser also. And, I mean, this book that I'm writing now, it's like I knew how I thought it was going to end, and I always knew, like, what was coming for several chapters. Then my characters would be like, yeah, but we want this other thing to happen. It was always far enough away that it didn't actually mess up what I'd already done for the most part. But I was able, I did have to keep stepping back and being like, really? Really? The plot goes here now instead of the, you know, the other direction. It was almost always, yeah, it's going in this other place. But it all seemed to work out this time.
Yeah, that's great. I'm starting to feel like our entire message in this episode is, it's good to adapt.
Yeah.
Be flexible and adapt, whether it's your life or your actual novel, it's things will be better if you can adapt. I've been assured in chat that linearly is in fact a word. Thank you, Daniel. And The Kids Are Asleep recommends Rachel Aaron's 2K to 10K, which is an ebook you can buy for pretty cheaply. I've read it, and I do appreciate her approach to it, but it's heavy on the outlining. Mm-hmm. But also, if I get past 4,000 and 5,000 words at a time, my hands hurt and my brain feels like a wrung out sponge. Almost literally, it feels like someone wrung out my brain and then just put it back up. There's almost a physical feeling of, I am so done with work today. I don't even think I can talk politely to people because the words just aren't there. So, do I have 10,000 words of writing I could do were everything else perfect? Maybe. But do I have limitations mentally and physically? Yes. So I like the idea.
I don't think I've ever written that many words at one go.
I think my biggest day was 8, and I paid for it.
Yeah, I try to, when I'm doing a first draft, I try to do like 1,000 to 2,000 a day.
Mm-hmm. Right. Hyperfocused dissociative dimension. Yes, kids are asleep. Well, Gwen, this has been awesome. If there's anything I have not asked that you would like to talk about, you can bring that up now.
Can't think of anything.
Okay. I thought I put in. Oh, right. I can't put things in the chat. Numbers Ninja, can you put exclamation point guest in the chat? That should give us information about Gwen and Can't Find My Way Home. Where can we find you online?
I'm on Twitter, Gwenga. That's my first name and first two letters of my last name. I have a website, GwenGarfinkel.com, that has links to everything that's available online. Those are probably the two best ways.
That's great. Wireduck just says, I just wandered in this afternoon and hearing Gwen's calm tales of overcoming obstacles is bringing me back to life.
That's nice.
Yes, okay, thank you, Numbers Ninja. We got our link to the book and what was supposed to be a link to your Twitch handle, but it did not seem to make a link, but okay, whatever. Yeah, so you can find Gwen's book there or on her site. I really, really like your stuff, Gwen. It's not only the genre spanning ability of it, but really loved the story you had for Escape Pod, and Can't Find My Way Home is just awesome. So I'm so glad you had a chance to come talk to us today. Can you give us one more information of what advice you give to new writers?
Just don't give up.
That is the best advice. Oh, definitely. Yes. I agree. Just to let you guys know about me, as I mentioned, I'm doing a writer's retreat next week. My intended co-host for Ditch Diggers will not be able to go to the writing retreat, so I don't know if I'm going to do Ditch Diggers or not. Let's call that as a tentative. It may happen. Keep your eyes open. Follow on Twitch, and then you'll get the notification. But I will be doing I Should Be Writing. It's just going to be from, like, the phone and the Twitch upload there, not any of the fancy overlays or cameras or anything, so unfortunately. But, yeah, that's my stuff coming up, because I gotta finish this book, y'all. It's gotta happen. But, Gwen, you've been a delight. Thank you so much. I hope you can come back with your next book when you get that settled. And I hope you guys have a great weekend.
I Should Be Writing is available to you under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Theme music by John Anilio. Art by Numbers Ninja. Production by Summer Brooks. And hosting by Libsyn. Find all of this information and more at Merverse.com. And remember, we can't do this without you. Thanks for your support.
Doctor Who.